Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Hello, how's it going? What is happening? I hope you're good. You're looking fierce trim. That diet that I told you about is working. You're looking really good. My name is Phil Taggart, and this is my Slacker Podcast. You're very, very welcome to it. This is a podcast where we get the most awesome bands, artists, we get them in, and we get their early demos on show, the very, very beginning bits. It's almost like getting to see a porn star without the makeup on. After the demo bit, we get down to the nitty gritty, not porn, just chat. On this episode, we have a band that can only be described as fucking gnarly. I was racking my head earlier on when I was thinking about this introduction. The only two words that kept coming to my brain was fucking gnarly. They are from foggy old London town. They are called Wolf Alice. And this was recorded in my temporary fetish dungeon in Soho in May of 2018. I absolutely adore this band, every aspect of it. They can write just the most killer tunes. Whether it's shoegaze tunes, whether it's big riffy monsters, whether it's grungy anthems, they're one of the most incredibly versatile bands that are going today. And both their debut album and their second album, you get that big sense of it. You need to go and listen to them if you haven't done so already. Also, massive congratulations, where massive congratulations are due, because Wolf Alice, only the other week, won the Mercury Music Prize. 25 grand in the back pocket for their second album, Visions of a Life. If you don't know what the Mercury Music Prize is, it's basically an award for the best UK album of the last year, and never has one band so deserved to win it. And look, it's a massive win for guitar bands as well. It's been absolutely years and years and years since a guitar band has won it. Was it Elbow the last one that won it? Was it Arctic Monkeys the last guitar band? I'm not even sure. And when things like this, there's always a knock-on that happens as well, and maybe the streaming platforms will help get behind bands a little bit more than they have been doing. So I said to my missus, if Wolf Alice win the Mercury tonight, I'm not coming home. I've just moved to Brighton, so it was either get the 1 a.m. train home or get the first one home in the morning. And true to my word, we went to the after party at the Hawley Arms in Camden, which is Amy Winehouse's old boozer. Ellie from Wolf Alice poured me a pint of stout, a pint of Guinness, and it was one of the best pints of Guinness I've ever had. I'm just completely made up for them. I feel like I'm still hungover about 5 days later. And yeah, it's just great to have a band win the Mercury Music Prize. So in the podcast today, we have got Ellie, the best front person in modern music, and Theo, the most iconic bass player since Alex James turned to cheese. And here's a little tease of what we got coming up on the podcast.
The main event was him playing, doing this thing. You can't play a Diablo. And we were just like the warm-up for this Diablo. The Diablo set.
I heard they had 300 grand in a fridge.
That's where I'd keep 300 grand if I had it, though.
Where else would you?
Yeah, I mean? Exactly.
Yeah, I feel like the only things I ever regret are the things I did when I was not being myself and trying to be someone else or something. And I can look back on that and be like, oh God, that's cringe.
But before we dive in, I would be forever in your debt if you could do me this one little favour. As the podcast is brand new and I am completely shitting myself doing my first audio project outside of the warm bosom of the BBC, It would be incredible if you could subscribe to it, if you could rate it, if you could review it. I'm sure you've listened to lots of podcasts before and they've asked you to do the same, but it really does make a massive difference. And the podcast is free as well. So if you like it, give it 5 stars. If you don't, maybe keep quiet about it and say nothing to nobody. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Theo and Ellie from Wolf Alice. Hello.
Hello.
Good afternoon. What's going on?
We just did live lounge.
What, there now?
Just now, yeah, earlier.
What did you cover?
Camila Cabello, We're Not The Same.
That's our song.
What's it called?
Never Be The Same.
Never Be The Same. She ripped us off.
In terms of like live lounge performances, is it in the upper echelon or is it in the relegation zone?
All four of our live lounge performances are in the upper echelons, and that's all there is to be said about.
What were the other what were the other covers that you did? What was your favourite one? This is on BBC Radio 1 for anybody's listening outside the UK. You have to come on and cover a song.
My favourite one was, I really enjoyed playing, we did a cover of Alt J's Matilda with a string section, and just getting the opportunity to work with a string section was cool.
Mm.
Maybe a bit of forethinking to, you know, a funeral that I might play, or maybe headlining Glastonbury one day.
I think if you start getting booked for funerals, that means that like you guys are on the slide.
Ah. Does it? Depends on whose funeral it is, mate.
But like random funerals, like not like if you, it's nice to turn up to your friend's funeral
that,
and play.
That would be weird and inappropriate if we were just showing up at people's funerals.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you to come play my wedding, but I don't think that's gonna happen now.
Why not?
I don't know. Do you want to play my wedding?
Yes.
Sweet. That's a verbal contract.
The calendar definitely permits it, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm sorry. I'll make sure that whatever festival that you're playing that day,
you need to
won't go forward anymore.
Yeah. Bring it off.
You're just back from the States. I want to get to that in a minute because I want to play the track first that you gave me, and it's a demo of You're a Germ. And let's hear it and let's talk about it off the back, okay?
Just
That was Wolf Alice on a demo of You're a Germ, which is off the debut album. Obviously, that was not the version that ended up on the debut album.
Unfortunately.
Like, it definitely sounds like a demo, but it's got like the whole bits of the song that ended up on the record. When did you make that?
I think it must have been, either 2012, around that point. I don't know.
So it's like early Wolf Alice. You started in 2010?
There's no one really knows when.
Nobody knows.
There's things happened, didn't they?
It's like the Big Bang.
Me and
Nobody
Joel
really knows when it happened.
Me and Joel started playing in like 2013, late 2012, 2013. And I remember that demo was something that Ellie had sent and everyone got excited about. With our demos, I always think you get the gist of it quite a lot of the time, but maybe it's not. You can really hear the shell of the song in it.
I feel like from that demo, you take a little bit of that and then you get into the room and you all like batter away until something amazing comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah, or something terrible.
does somebody have like a specific foible when like a riff goes the right way or a melody goes the right way or something goes right? Is it like, you know, somebody puts their arms up and goes, yes, we've done it. This is the best song we've ever learned.
Yeah, I think we used to have that quite a lot when we were first writing tunes together.
But that was also just because it was amazing to us, I think, that the four of us had managed to make something cohesive at one point. It's just like actually doing it, starting to feel like a band.
Yeah.
Real achievements. And I think now it's changed a little bit because maybe our
pros now.
Bar's higher. Well, we're better,
yeah.
I think, than we were. But there's still an energy in the room when something goes right. I really remember Sad Boy coming together on this, which was off the second record.
Yeah.
And I remember everyone being like, wow, this is actually like a step forward for us. Luckily, everyone who reviewed the album all said that song stood out as the not step forward.
Stood out as a not step forward.
Stood out
really
as the
good
not
review
step
that.
Forward. I kind of like that as a lyric.
It's best foot forward backwards.
You do the hokey cokey and you shake it all about, and that's what Wolf Alice are all about.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course it is.
Dance.
You guys are looking pretty sun-kissed. They've spent a little time out in the US.
Very big country. You really do learn that when you start touring.
Yeah. I remember hearing a story about Blur and when they were out on one of their first US tours and their bus broke down and it was in the middle of the desert and they were just pissed off and they went out and started kicking rattlesnakes at each other.
Wow, that's cooler than any other store we have.
It's like
to
kicking
offer.
Rattlesnakes at each other.
Maybe it was snakes. I think maybe I've added rattlesnakes just for a
bit. Who was this?
Blur.
Do you know what? I reckon Alex James weren't kicking no rattlesnakes at anyone.
Nah.
It's hard to find multiple rattlesnakes as soon as you get off a bus.
This is the man who spent £1 million on cocaine and champagne at his own admission and now is the cheese man. He can do anything.
Do you know what? Anyone who admits it and says it themselves maybe didn't do it. It has to be said about people.
I would tell everyone if I did that.
Do you think so?
What about £100 on gas and some iron brew?
But is it not... is it not like the guy at school?
No, everyone's got a mill, yeah. Alex.
Is it not like the guy at school who would come in... Like when you were like 16 or 17 going, oh yeah, just like snogged 14 birds last night.
Yeah, and you're Jay, the no, in-betweeners guy.
Yeah, but every school had that sort of person that came in and just like chatted shit all the time.
Yeah.
Conspiracy theorists are always quite fun.
I'm getting more and more a believer of what once were conspiracy theories to me are now realities, except for like chemtrails and all that bollocks.
Yeah, why?
I don't know, I just feel like it's coming true. I do feel like the government are watching you and all that stuff.
Like conspiracy theories don't seem so far-fetched
exactly.
anymore, really.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose in the Donald Trump, Black Mirror kind of world, it is a little bit more. But at the same time, like, I've got your phone plugged into my laptop right now.
Does it say access my photos?
Yeah.
Please, I beg you, don't, Phil.
I'm not accessing your photos.
Mad
but
inappropriate.
I can take your data right now and I can sell it on.
Yeah.
For whatever.
Go for it, man. My mum was shouting at me earlier because she read an article about people hacking baby cameras in their rooms and she said she was like, if you ever
never have a baby.
Have a baby camera.
That's mental. Mm. So I want to go back to like the very, very beginning of like just like your first musical loves and what got you into like this scenario that we're in right now in a basement in Soho talking about music. Like I know like growing up about like 4 or 5 years old, that's when I kind of started like really,
really, four,
really
five.
enjoying music. Right, yeah, like, yeah, you know, like I wasn't going, I was sitting at 4 or 5 going, oh yeah, I'm going to be a rock star. I was too busy like falling over, yeah, shitting myself.
Well, still doing.
Yeah,
that.
Exactly. Well, yeah, both, but only on the weekends now. So what sort of music was it, like the first kind of like Road to Damascus moment for you guys?
All of mine are kind of a bit embarrassing. My dad used to play Bob Marley really loud, and I remember being dancing to that a lot as a little kid.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not embarrassing at all.
It's not embarrassing. Bob Marley.
It's just a bit embarrassing thinking of your dad listening to Bob Marley. Do you know what I mean? A bit naff.
Was he smoking joints while he was doing it?
Jack does a lot of choice things. But I remember dancing. I remember the first time I started dancing. Like, you know, when you're like a little kid and you want to like move around, it's mm-hmm. quite a natural intuition to hear. And I have a memory of that. I don't really have many. I can't, like, when people say they can remember what they were up to when they're six, I think they're lying bastards.
But see, I can remember hearing my first ever track because it was in a tractor. In the countryside,
the first
Ireland.
Tune you heard was in a tractor.
It was in a tractor, yeah. It was Queen, Under Pressure. No, Radio Gaga. It was Radio Gaga because the.
Are you doing that line that we were talking about?
No, I lived on like a farm until I was about 14, and the guy Shane who used to like drive the tractor was like mad into like Bon Jovi and Guns N' Roses and Queen. So that's where I knew that music came from. So that's where I thought. Right.
So you go to the tractor for the music.
Go to the tractor.
Yeah, you associate. I still really remember this like hi-fi system my dad had in the house, and it was like this huge black tiered thing that now is completely obsolete in modern technology. But I remember loving picking out CDs.
What about you, Ellie?
Yeah, I think the first time I really remember enjoying music a lot was listening to... I used to like playing... a game where I'd pretend to be in the music videos of the pop songs that I liked. So, you know, kind of things like, I don't know, Steps and Avril Lavigne. And
was it the 5, 6, 7, 8 video?
But doing my own ones as well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And kind of proposing that game to friends who'd come round and stuff.
Would they just sit and watch you?
No, I don't think I was. It wasn't all about. It wasn't because I wanted loads of attention. It was more that I liked pretending to be in that kind of. It wasn't I was trying to pretend to be a pop star. I was trying to pretend to live out this song.
Yeah.
So yeah, I remember doing that and enjoyed that. And then I guess. So yeah. Sometimes I wonder how and why I became a performer, but I guess I have been doing it for quite a while if I enjoyed doing stuff like that when I was a kid.
I think if you look back into like the roots of like when you were younger, there's like little bits and pieces of it that kind of you didn't even know were there until you sort of look back a little bit further. I thought like I had no idea I wanted to do like radio or any of that sort of stuff until like I went back through my old... Do you remember your record of achievements and like your grades and stuff that you would get at school? Mm. And I had like written it in third year.
You'd explicitly said it?
Yeah, I didn't even know that.
So
and I was like, shit, right, okay.
I want to be a radio DJ or a DJ or a presenter.
I want to work or talk about music, and that was it.
And that's much nicer than saying I want to be a radio presenter, isn't it? Because it's like
it's the reason why
that exists, isn't it? You want to do it.
I think
for the sake
wanting
of
to be a presenter is kind of like
it's a bit
like a music presenter. You want to do it because you like music. But if you want to be like
a presenter, not knocking presenters though.
No,
there's
definitely
some
not.
Great presenters out there. There's an art to that as well, I reckon.
Yeah,
definitely.
You can love the art of that.
It's like the patter. Have you got it down now? Because you have to do like.
No, we're
a
not.
Lot of radio stuff. I'm sure in the US you have to do as well. It's KYY Eagle here in the morning. You got Stinky in the butt. We got Wolf Alice in front of us here today.
Look, if you do that and then expect someone to talk after it, instantly weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
The radio in America is quite daunting, actually, sometimes those interviews, I find, because people are so enthusiastic and it's quite alien if you're a bit...
And you sound so, like, miserable coming after them.
Yeah, there's no way you can match their energy, is there?
No,
because I don't know if it's real energy. It's some kind of mad construct that I've never witnessed in real life.
Some sort of like weird energy drink that they've been
probably
sponsored by.
Loads of Monster and loads of alternative radio hits.
Did you guys get into like, were you like the kids that would walk around with sort of poetry books and stuff in your pocket? I'm just saying that like as a mad observation, but like,
I used to run about with like the beat poets when I was like 17 or 18.
Or like copy it on the road.
Kerouac and like Bukowski and Larkin. And not that he's a beat poet, but I kind of get the vibe that you might have done the same thing.
You did, definitely, Theo.
You probably still do, do you?
Nah, I don't still carry poetry books. I've perpetuated like a stereotype that I used to do it when I was a teenager. I'm not even sure whether
you
I did. Really did.
Okay, can I tell an embarrassing story?
Yeah, go on.
When I first met Theo, what, we must have been like 14, 15, and we were at a party that I wasn't invited to.
Nah, which part was it?
Lottie's.
Yeah. Wasn't it her sister's party?
No. And there was a trampoline in the back of the garden. And we were on the trampoline. And I think we struck up a conversation. You'd asked me what my favourite poet was.
Your favourite poet?
And I was like, oh my, I don't think I knew one poet.
That's really pretentious, isn't it?
You can get away with that when you're 14. Like, that's totally fine.
I thought it was really cool, but I was ashamed that I did not know a poet.
What was your answer? Did you just run away?
No, I think
Benjamin
I said like,
Zephaniah.
Yeah, like the only, you know, like the ones that, yeah, Benjamin Zephaniah or something. I don't know something that you know at school.
Carol Ann Duffy.
Yeah.
I remember discovering like John Cooper Clarke and stuff like that really vividly and like trying to dress like him and all that stuff.
See, if you were like, you guys are from London, and if you had been, this is, I'm guessing, about 10, 12 years ago, right?
Yeah.
If you were dressing like John Cooper Clarke 12 years ago in London, people would have thought, oh, there's the Horrors, there's the Towers of London.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was, not Towers of London, but I was listening to the Horrors and like Experiment on a Bird in an Air Pump, and what was the other band? Neil's Children. There was this whole...
80s Matchline.
80s Matchbox Be London.
I got that completely wrong.
they're great. There was this whole thing. Do you remember this? Do you ever go to a thing called Offset Festival?
I'm a country boy.
Anyway, there's this thing called Offset and all those bands.
I went to the horse show once a year and that was about it.
You could have gone to the horse show in a pair of winkle pickers and dyed black hair.
Did you guys like used to wait outside for your favourite artists and try and get stuff signed and get in the pit and stuff?
I personally never waited outside, but I was fanatic to an extent. Like, I really loved it, but I never did the waiting outside thing. But I did, you know, I queued up early and stuff.
Pete Doherty threw a shoe at me when I waited outside his tour bus in Belfast.
That's so mean.
That's bang out of order.
I mean, in the pantheon of things that Pete Doherty's done. No. I've still got that shoe to this day. He's got huge feet.
What, size 15?
They're massive.
He's got big feet.
Yeah.
He's a tall guy, actually.
He is really tall. He's a big.
I remember when we saw him in real life in Switzerland, and I was like, wow, he's tall.
In real life.
It is. It's like seeing a caricature. Do you know when, like,
when someone's that famous, it's quite hard to, like, I don't know.
And he was playing the guitar. Backstage, I was like, fuck it.
Was he singing about Albion?
No, but he was definitely singing. That was cool. I loved Pete Doherty. I loved the Libertines.
Me too. Yeah,
I loved the Libertines.
I just love that whole idea. I love how, like, I'm very Irish, but I loved how sort of anarchistic and British that they were. Like, they were. It was almost like they'd taken the Kinks, but mixed a little healthy dose of like punk rock into it as well.
They were very naughty boys, from what I can gauge. Or what I would like to believe.
Oh God, yeah! Like the stories about the Libertines are legendary. They're levels of debauchery.
I heard they had 300 grand in a fridge.
That's where I'd keep 300 grand if I had it, though.
Where else would you?
Exactly. I want to talk about how the group got together, like how you started writing music and how it turned into the four piece, really.
We were all kind of doing our own thing. Joel was playing in a band called Mafia Lights with James Balmont from Swim Deep and another one of their friends, Cam. And you were playing in Lazy Lion with Daniel Blackman, who's Jelani Blackman now, and Rina
Sawayama.
Everybody's doing pretty well out of those bands, and I know
all
of them.
It's really weird, that selection of people, especially seeing Rina and Jelani of Ink of... Their careers are kind of really taking off now. So like,
very recently,
We used to be in a, but we went all went to college together. But anyway, we were all doing that.
And I was playing music with a little unknown musician called Joff. And,
whatever happened to the guy?
No one knows. yeah, and one of our friends, Cal, kind of brought us together when Joff and I were playing with two other friends who, you know, for separate reasons dropped out. And we had one festival booked. I think it was even like Barn on the Farm or something.
Yeah.
And Cal McRae, first, did you come to that?
No, but
he often came to our shows before he joined.
There was like three or four shows like that I was at.
Dream moment where you're in the crowd and you're like, we want him. The light just comes upon you, you get up on stage and tear
kind
it up.
Of like that. It was kind of.
I think it was like that. It's like, okay, I'll
crazed
do you a
fan.
Favor.
Theo,
we basically all had a want to be playing music, and Joel filled in and played. Said he could play drums. He'd never played drums before, but he's so talented that he can instantly for some reason. He played Barn on the Farm, and then when Sadie left, he was playing bass at the time and singing and doing percussion and stuff. I ended up filling in, and we'd like been hanging out before that while Wolf Alice had been in an incarnation, I suppose. Yeah. And then when we started playing actual, like, I remember when Fluffy was like coming together the song in a Storm rehearsal space. Storm, a rehearsal studio in Holloway. I really remember being like, oh wow, we're going to be millionaires. And we're not. So
you're on your way.
Yeah. Don't know about that.
two number two records.
How many records do you reckon you need to sell to get a number two? Three?
I don't know how many.
I'll tell you. Not a lot.
That Shania Twain chart battle, not as heated as you would think back in the day.
Shania Twain was the battle of the second album to get to number one.
Yeah.
The first one was who?
First one was Florence and the Machine.
See, that's not, like, I'm sure you can't beget Florence and the Machine getting to number one, but Shania Twain,
I can.
It's a bit like, well, I suppose you can.
Because she got number one because she suddenly headlined Glastonbury because Dave Grohl broke his leg. So my real beef is with Dave Grohl.
That was the same year that you played
the Park Stage. And
yeah,
the
and I was
stage.
Watching that back home because I didn't go that year. And I was like deep into like bottle of wine number two, watching that, like pumping the air.
We
going,
were on at three.
This
Phil.
Is great. Yeah, the red button. You can watch it whenever you want.
Oh right, okay. For 3 p.m. Just second yeah. bottle of wine.
No, you were getting. Yeah, exactly. I had a problem. All right, I had a problem.
That's why I didn't know.
But yeah, I remember that like moment for you guys. Like it's such a fast forward from where you started to that point. But like that to me was like, it felt like you'd come of age. Like you were like, right, this is a serious. Not that you weren't a serious band beforehand, but like, I think you proved a lot of stuff to a lot of people that day.
Yeah, we were a bit rubbish for a while, basically, playing live.
But you took
we had a lot of passion.
You took your time, like, so when I started doing the radio, there was a lot of bands that were coming out and they were releasing their debut albums before they probably should be releasing their debut albums. They had a lot of pressure on them from labels, like Enemy or traditional media would kind of get on board with them. And then they would rush it out, but you guys took your time.
I think that's a credit to Dirty Hit, to be fair, because we were really desperate to put out an album as soon as we signed with them.
Yeah.
Because for us, we felt like we'd been playing these songs and touring quite extensively for, you know, looking back, not that long. Yeah, but it felt long.
We've been doing this our whole lives.
Yeah.
It's probably, been like 2 years or something, or a year and a half maybe. But
it was the same songs pretty much, so it was kind of like, well, we're ready. I think it was, anyway.
Yeah.
But anyway, we wanted to put it out, and they were like, no, just trust us.
Yeah,
no,
exactly. You gotta wait. Like, I, from releasing stuff on my label, I've got a band probably about at the same stage as you were then, and they want to put out stuff, and it's just like, need a fan base first.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's really hard
you
to tell.
You have to go out and tour.
It's hard to convey that to a band when you're at that age as well, when I think if you have kind of your eyes are on this prize and you got the blinkers on of like you want to get this music out and you need to, but yeah, Jamie specifically, to his credit, from our label, really helped us in that sense.
It's really difficult trying to figure it all out at the start, like especially when you don't have management or even knowledge of like putting stuff out.
I think for any band starting out, a setback's probably money, isn't it? And working
always money.
Hours and stuff like that. It's so difficult. Luckily, people had... I mean, your work seemed, when we were touring, was really flexible with the hours you could do and stuff
like that. Yeah, I owe quite a lot to my boss at the time, who just kind of let me leave whenever I needed to.
That's pretty sound. Where'd you work?
Well, I worked wherever he worked. So I started in Lacoste and then I moved to Nudie Jeans and worked just retail,
just
really.
There, down the road.
Yeah, around here, actually. And he loved rock music, and he played music himself, and he just wanted me to succeed, really.
It's really good to have like an understanding boss like that, because you need to be able to feed yourself.
It's a big constraint, and if you don't have, like, luckily our families lived in London, so it's easier. Well, Joel's in Surrey, but we had somewhere to stay.
Yeah.
But that's really difficult, and to balance rehearsals, recording, gigging, and working at the same time, you can't really find any time to think at that point.
It's like, I really hate that old adage that people have, though. They think like musicians are lazy.
Yeah,
and you're like, well,
some definitely are. I know a few.
Yeah, I know a lot of musicians that are lazy and give people a bat. But I mean, like, musicians that take it seriously and want to make a career out of it have to be able to graft. Almost use both sides of their brain, be able to graft to make money, and then be able to like use all of their spare time. It's like you don't actually have a social life, or that definitely takes an impact.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of hard work in the beginning, especially if you're doing making a Facebook event for stuff. That stuff out, it seems
I
to
hate
take...
doing stuff like that. I still have to, like, I started putting gigs on when I was 15, and I sometimes, like, with like the label and the club nights and stuff that I do, I'm sitting there like literally double my life, like going, why the Facebook fuck group? Am I setting up a Facebook event group? I'm 30 years old.
You need an intern.
Huh?
You need an intern. A paid intern.
Yeah, paid intern. That's why, like, I've had people come.
I'll do it.
Do you want to do it? Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
What's your rate?
£1,000.
£1,000 for 10 years, or £1,000 for
one-off payment?
One-off payment? No, cash down.
Yeah, cash up.
I think that works. Did you put on your own shows and stuff at the start? Or
like, no.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Actually, we...
just like go and play wherever.
I don't know, did we? I don't think so. We played plenty of shows before we ever had like a booking agent or a promoter or anything like that. But no, we didn't organise our own shows. Don't think anyone would have been there, so that it wouldn't.
I really like when, at the very early parts of being in a band, you'll just say yes to any gig, and you'll be like delighted that somebody's asked you to come and play.
I think that's the key. Like, if you can, you should definitely.
If you're a band that I feel like similar to the way we were set up. If you're like a four-piece band like that, that you can play in that environment, you should, because you're only going to get better from doing that, and better at every aspect of your performance and your character will be built from that.
Big time. I've played with country bands. I've played with like really, really heavy metal, like old heavy metal dudes, and we'd be like sounding like Elvis Costello up before them.
Yeah, it's good character building.
Pits, yeah, exactly. Yeah, big time. Really, really does. And they, even the bad gigs, like as much as you hate them and want to jack everything in and just think this is shit, I'm going to go
definitely
and work in retail, or like I'm going to go back and do the retail job full time.
Yeah,
you learn so much from the bad stuff.
And also they become like funny memories, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, at the time they might be like, no, why is this happening? But you'll really appreciate those when you're older and look back.
What are the ones that stand out for you?
I always remember when we were just starting off before Theo and Joel had joined, and Sadie's brother went to university in Sheffield, and he like got us a gig playing something, and we were like, okay, that's quite far to go, but I don't think we'd ever I don't think I've ever really been outside of London into another city anyway, and Joff was like, I can't come because Joff was at university. So Sadie and I, we'll just do it on our own, and we went down there, we got the mega bus down there, and it was like in a park, and the person we were supporting turned out to be a Diablo player.
A Diablo?
That circus trick.
It's
like, you know, you got the two sticks and the little spinny
piece
thing.
Of string.
Oh, it's like poi. It's what like the hippies in the park do.
Yeah, like
so
super
it was us and then him on the stage.
Was he doing it during your set?
No, he was like, the main event was him playing with doing this thing. You can't play a Diablo, and we were just like the warm up for this Diablo.
The Diablo set.
I'm like, oh, okay.
You should get him.
I travelled very, very far on the bus for this.
That's
but then it was like
incredible.
One of the, I had a bloody great night, and I always think about that sometimes. So I'm glad I did it. You know.
Have you ever thought about contacting the Diablo guy and be getting him involved with like some of the
Diablos?
Yeah.
No.
Or the stick in between two other sticks. I hate that.
What's your worst gig? Because you came along a little bit after that, didn't you?
I had some funny gigs with my first band where I remember we played at Goldsmith's student bar, but no one had asked us to, it turned out.
Did you just show up with your gear going, we're on?
A quiz night was on and we just played. We just showed up and played anyway. And it was really bad. People booed.
What kind of person boos? I mean, unless you're like, you know.
I think they were just trying to get, couldn't hear the quiz because we were just started playing a game.
I find it really weird when people don't clap after songs.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't like not clapping after a song.
I
find London.
I hate booing more than that.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I take no clapping over some booing.
I think anyone is a strange person if they go out of their way to criticise. Like, imagine watching something on the telly.
Yeah.
I watch stuff on the telly all the time. And you don't like it, and then you go, oh, wait a second, I need to get my phone out. And directly tell this person that I think this is shit.
But you forget that those, like, sometimes I do it when, because I'm so aware now that you cannot do that to anyone, regardless of how big or famous they are, but sometimes you forget when it's like, movies or something like that, and you're like, this movie is rubbish, and I'm like, wait, even they, you know, it's quite hard to not.
Is there not times that you're allowed to do that?
I've said this, but
Eurovision.
I do it all the time. I was almost live tweeting during Eurovision.
Live tweet. Actually, I saw your tweets.
Good was Eurovision?
Eurovision was great. This is when we recorded this in May.
Who did you want to win?
I wanted Sweden to win.
What was Sweden?
It was like a disco track.
Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it. No,
I should say Ireland.
Yeah, should have said Ireland. It was boring,
I didn't want England to win.
Do you want England to win the World Cup?
Yes.
Yeah, because that would be a fun.
Imagine going down the pub
night
when that happens. Yeah. Mad.
I'm Irish, so
might end up getting engaged again.
They're making a reference to the fact that in 2017, in January, in the second or third week of January.
Don't look at me. You need to remember this. It's not me.
I went off booze after the new year, and me and my missus decided to go out for a lovely meal, and then we went to the Wetherspoons, which is the Rochester right beside our house,
yeah,
which is like the oldest in the world.
Yeah,
isn't
something
it?
Like that. Or the best, anyway.
It's the best one, anyway. And then I got really drunk and got engaged to my missus, and you guys were there.
Yeah.
And I remember that one of Joel, your drummer, was like saying that he was the king of the Rochester. he was saying he was the king of the Rochester, and I thought, now that I got engaged there or around there anyway,
I'm so happy.
Me and
Fancher
are the king and queen of the Rochester.
Yeah, you actually are now.
We are, yeah, exactly. We could be Weatherspoon's first married couple. Do you think people have got married in Weatherspoon? They have.
100%.
Yeah, definitely have.
100%.
Two chili con carne, £6. Will you marry me?
I'd happily get married in a Weatherspoon's. Phil Tiger.
Slacker Podcast. There you go. A glimpse into post-Brexit love. 2-for-1 weddings and Weatherspoon's. I mean, it just screams love. Sign me up to that. Thank you so much for listening so far. The Slacker Podcast series is just getting going. This is Series 1. There are 16 interviews in Series 1. And in the coming weeks, we will have Novelist. We will have Gary Lightbody. We will have The Cribs. We will have Leon Bridges. We will have Churches. We will have Muramasa. And I'm also securing some really, really big names now. And we'll be probably going up until the start of the new year. I'm already planning Season 2. And I don't even know how Season 1's going yet. Is that a good idea? I don't know. Also, on a sort of side tip to this as well, I'm on Sunday evening in London in the 100 Club. I'm co-curating a lineup with the lovely people at Fred Perry Subculture. And it's kind of in the spirit of those all-day punk gigs that they used to put on in the 70s. But we're doing it with like the most new, exciting and underground artists. So if you fancy popping down, there's probably a couple of tickets about. I don't know, by this stage, it could be sold out. But we've got Black Midi, Denzel himself, Puma Blue, Kojak, Alaska Alaska, Dylan Cartledge, Sons of Raphael, Black Country New Road, Audiobooks, Jockstrap, and Jerskin Friendrix. And there's a couple more to be announced as well. So, right, back to the podcast. We still have to talk about the Arctic Monkeys' new record, The Definition of a Rockstar, and of course, first getting signed and politics. Here we go.
You've always been pretty, like, on it. Like, you've always used your position to be able to say something and do something. I think that's like really admirable, because like your life would probably be easier if you said nothing at all.
Sure,
do you know what I mean? Like you wouldn't be open to criticism. You wouldn't be.
Although I think things are changing now, aren't they? And people are more quick to criticize people who don't say anything. In this kind of
you can't win.
They weren't 2 years ago. People weren't. You were more open to criticism if you put it.
That was when the whole Brexit thing was kicking off, and
yeah, I think there's been a positive galvanisation of people thinking and talking about things and using their platform. So now, to the point that it has got to that where you're criticised for not talking about something, and you can't. It's quite difficult to have a very effective and informed opinion of everything in the world, because no one has that.
Yeah. You could, like, if you have to be really careful about what you say and how you say it, because you did a lot with for refugees. You put on that a series of gigs,
yeah,
really
three nights
in London at Cameo a couple of years ago, and is it something that you feel like you have to go out and do?
No, I think
as a band, or is it something you should do?
I think you should want to do it, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's no harm in I think you should want to do it. I don't know how. Yeah, it's hard, because it is scary to put. You forget how many people are watching you, don't you? Sometimes you say something, and the next thing you know, like, it's on news outlets,
news
and you just think as yourself as you were your whole life. You know, it's just little old you or whatever. So
yeah.
But I mean, with the things that I think that we've used our band, social medias and stuff to talk about and to organise and to galvanise, are things that are pretty black and white to us, and that we've been,
discussed between the four of us and stuff like that.
It feels like the first time in my life that there's been a real engagement with young people in politics. Like, I can't remember that ever.
Yeah, I think so too.
Happening in the years that I've been going. I'm sure, like, in the 80s and in the 70s, there was lots of stuff going on, but
the thing is, it takes things to get pretty bad for people to really engage with things, unfortunately. And when there is things are not always amazing, but when things are a bit better, then you get complacent.
So you signed a chess club before Dirty Hit Records, Chess Club did all of the early stuff. What was it like getting like a record label involved with your music? That must have been cool.
Yeah, really cool. I think, it was,
like recognition.
Yeah.
A pat on the back. Someone saying that you're not just, it's not just your mum and your dad.
Yeah.
Just being like, oh, yeah, it's all right.
You get to use that as well. Like when you get played on the radio or you get like signed to a record deal or a publishing deal, it gives you that ammunition to go home and go, look, what I'm doing is actually worthwhile and I'm good at it.
Yeah, validation. It's weird that it was really great for us to have someone else to that's not, you know, in our inner circle saying that you can do this.
It's really important, like, to tell people that are really good at something as well at the very beginning, because everybody's living in their own head and they think they're shit all the time.
It definitely is. I think encouragement is really necessary at that stage. And then maybe in a weird way, less encouragement is better. Well, not in a weird way. It's when you get bigger.
How does it work now? Because, like, you've done two albums. Do you need encouragement to do a third one, or do you need people to go... Do you need to be an underdog, or do you need to be seen to be achieving?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know what we need.
I always feel like I work better as an underdog when I've got like an axe to grind something to prove. Yeah,
I think that spurs us on quite a lot when we're playing shows, having something to prove. I think we all relish that. We just did a support tour for the first time in a while, and having people come who don't know you is exciting to prove to them that you're good or worth their attention.
Do you have to play harder at like support shows, especially with like Queens of the Stone Age and stuff as well?
Yeah,
I think you do, but it's quite fun, isn't it? It's quite fun to be
scared.
Is it like, what about when you played with the 1975? When you supported the 1975 and you supported Queens of the Stone Age, how like were they the same shows that you were going to see?
No.
I think the 1975 have fans who, and I mean this in a good way, they kind of like things that the 1975 are supporting already. So it's the less of a tough crowd in a way.
They're on your side to an extent.
No, but then to be fair, it was quite hard because I didn't think at first that, I don't know, that they liked us so much. I don't know. It's all different. And it's dependent on each show as well. You know, from one to the other, it's not the same.
I think that with anything sort of creative or artistic, there's a certain element of nervosa that goes along with it and critiquing each of your shows. Do you still do that?
Yeah, like, we still do that.
When we would have a bad show when I was playing in my band, we could barely even look at each other after the show.
There's definitely a strange energy when you have a bad show and everyone's a bit off key about it.
Must be few and far between now. Like you are on the road so much.
It's less than it was before, but we still were fine. I mean, like, for example, with our UK show, the big headline show we just did at Ali Pali and stuff, we were still fine-tuning the set list. That's very millennial. The set list and set aspects list of the production and stuff right up until later shows. We were still... What am I talking about?
You're talking about how rad your band is, man.
I've completely lost track of what I'm talking about. But yeah, music's a laugh.
Well, it is. It's all right. What are your hobbies outside of music? What do you get up to? I sometimes do get fed up, not like of music in general, but when you listen to music all day, you have to have something else to kind of like sorbet your mind.
Sorbet your mind.
That's the name of my middle class rock band.
Mind sorbet. You're a good reader, Ellen Rousel.
Yeah, I like reading and writing.
Like creative writing? Would you ever... Is it something that you want to put out there, or is it something that you just are happy to do yourself?
It's something that I would like to get better at and grow in confidence with. Yeah. I mean, I just kind of write... I guess like it's the same as writing. Sometimes you like my lyrics start off as something else, really. But yeah, I like reading and writing. But you, what about you?
But you get that out of like some of the songs you write, like Sky Musings.
Yeah.
Like I feel like that could almost be a story.
You're
living in somebody's head who's flying along and is completely gripped with anxiety.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel conflicted about. Melody often prohibiting writing, you know what I mean?
Like getting out exactly what you want to convey.
Yeah, and then having to slot it into
lyrical form. Yeah,
yeah.
Probably that's interesting. Actually,
explains a lot of the spoken word stuff that you do in your songs. Like, it's got that sort of Teenage Riot, Sonic Youth kind of sort of whisper to it, which I really like.
Yeah.
Other things that you are very good at is photography. If we're on the subject of things you're good at.
I'm actually not, because I just got some film back. And
take the damn compliment.
That photo of me and Johnny letting off fireworks is an unbelievable photo.
But I mean,
photo.
Like, that was like one out of 50, you know?
Well, you've got...
I need to learn.
You take enough photos to have an exhibition by that
standard. yeah, that's something I'd like to get better at. It's fun on tour because you go to so many places, and I always have Theo as my muse.
You made me into an emoji.
What's your emoji?
There's a picture of me sitting in front of a bunch of fireworks wearing sunglasses, and I just look like the smiling sunglasses emoji. It's a classic. Nothing too elaborate. Not the skiing men or the two musketeers, who are my new favourites at the moment.
Oh, really?
Seen them?
I haven't seen them.
I like the emoji where it's got the cracked head and there's like loads of
loads of volcanic
vibe. Stuff coming
this
out of it.
This is the classic though, isn't it?
This
is the radio.
Explaining that. I don't even know how you explain it. It's like a right angle.
It's a tick with your fingers pressed to your chin.
Oh, that's good. That's really good. Great broadcasting, Theo.
Thank you.
I really like that. Was this, when you said like letting off fireworks, it piqued my interest?
Uh-huh. No, that's what you like to do in your spare time.
Oh, mate, do you know what? Yeah. I fucking love fireworks.
Yeah.
They're amazing. They bring joy to everyone who watches them and is involved.
You did bring a lot of joy to us on that tour.
Did you buy the fireworks for the...
Yeah, I bought some fireworks. I bought a Zorro, which is a handheld sword, hence the Zorro aspect. There's a fountain, a few bottle rockets, a few crackers, which I like lobbing at people when they're in the back of the trailer. one of the best fireworks shops I've ever been to in my life.
Roman candles are my favourite.
Love that.
We used to buy them around Halloween time when we were like, maybe not even teenagers, like 11 or 12. And we used to stick the Roman candle, the bit you're meant to put into the ground, like in the crack of our bums, and then like light it and let them off.
That is a bit of me, Phil.
Yeah. Are you into...
I've not done that yet, but...
You will be.
We'll be doing that now.
Okay.
I just love them, man. I did it with my mum the other day and my sister.
Letting fireworks on?
I didn't do fireworks out of the bum with my mum, but I did. I did do fireworks in the garden, and everyone was so happy.
Oh, this could be like a, you could be like one of these people that goes on tour and does the
pyro,
the little circuits around all the small festivals around the north.
What?
With
what?
I'd support
with
you.
Fireworks?
Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, you could close like the summer carnival. And
I don't think I'd pass any of the regulated safety aspects of it. I'd do it a bit freestyle. Just get on with it. Hold it.
What you should do as well, if you're doing that, you should have an eye patch so it doesn't look you're like
loads
very good
burns
at your job.
On my hands. Man, I'm telling you, fireworks, that's my interest. That and five-a-side football.
I wanted to talk about the... I've talked to you about this, and I've wanted to for ages. Is like standing toe to toe with Noel Gallagher when he was giving off about stuff, not like metaphorically toe to toe.
Oh right, sorry, I was about to say we've never stood that close to Noel Gallagher.
When he was spouting his usual
about Harry Styles.
I've got an album coming out, so I'm going to say some incendiary stuff.
Is that a thing when he was talking about Harry Styles?
Yeah.
In One Direction. That's my fault.
What was he saying?
He said something about, I can't remember now, but something absolutely horrible about One Direction.
He wished
they all had drug addiction.
He wished someone in music would have a drug habit.
Yeah, I got really pissed off by that. And I did this interview with Gigwise, and I remember feeling really bad because they made the headline me calling him like a mod C word or something really rude, which is actually out of order. But to swish, it's funny if you need a bit of a soundbite and you need to sell your record after fucking 30,000 years. But to wish people to have drug addictions and you've got people listening to you, hanging on your every word. I think addiction and wishing something like that on people is really negative, and it's not going to breed a good culture of musicians.
I don't really feel like he's one of these people, like,
obviously
particularly thinks about the actions of it. But then, like... That's his whole idea of rock and roll, is like...
It's a pastiche, it's an old
just
idea.
saying stuff and...
Selling records
off the back of it and getting in fights and, you know, just providing things for the media to be able to go and sell.
I understand the culture of it, of people living vicariously through rock starness and all that, those things. But in terms of the actual actions, especially in the current climate, I think it is more difficult to do that.
There are no rock stars in guitar music anymore.
It depends on what you want a rock star to be nowadays, because we can set the parameters of it. And if they have to be shagging loads of people and saying
tons of money,
stupid stuff, and doing mountains of drugs, then then I don't know if anyone wants to be a rock star really anymore. But at the same time, it's pretty good. Doing drugs are pretty good.
These are not the views of this podcast.
I'm conflicted by this conversation as well.
Why?
I do think...
Because it is entertaining, be fun.
Entertainment, yeah. But
you don't want it to be too safe, but you don't want people to become... You don't want people to say really stupid stuff off the back of it.
I just don't like the thing that people keep saying that there's no rock stars anymore and all these things.
But it's always people...
But it's a culture that's not being bred. No one's been 23 and handed £7 million or whatever. Do you know what I mean? To go off and live this fantasy life.
But the only people that are looking for those rock stars are the people that were fans of their music first time around. It's like, I don't think...
Are
15, 14-year-old kids looking for rock stars now?
I don't know.
Probably, but it's just a different thing. Yeah,
yeah. You don't get young people being like, why isn't no one like, you know, saying, why I wish... You don't get younger people saying, I wish Harry Styles had a drug addiction.
I don't. I wish he kept wearing those amazing outfits he's wearing.
And his nice hats.
Have you seen what he's been wearing lately? He looks amazing. He's been working with this designer, Harris Reed, or wearing his clothes. And I've never seen someone look cooler on stage in my life. I'll show you some photos from his Amsterdam gig.
I definitely think we have rock stars still, for sure. They're just not what
Joel,
we
Joel, he's
might...
king of the rock.
Yeah, he's king of rocks.
King of the Rochester. He's a rockster star. That doesn't work. But yeah, like I think if you're looking about it in traditional terms, I think that sort of... hedonism and narcissism exists still in music, and
people are inherently hedonistic and narcissistic to an extent.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just if you've got how much you want to celebrate,
if you've got a ton of money, you're gonna spend it, and if you're a little bit dim, you're gonna spend it badly as well. Do you know, like
these are facets of everyone's character. This is just how much you explore them, and it's fun to get yourself off by someone else doing it.
I wanted to talk to you about the. About like the stuff that you know about the music industry now, and like the sort of information and pearls of wisdom that you wish you had of knowing when you were starting out, that you could pass on to the mini versions of you that are kicking about now, looking to get into it.
I think trusting your gut and doing right by your band and what you have the idea of yourselves being is the best idea, because no one really knows what's going on in the music industry, and no one knows what's being honest and like true to yourselves is generally always a better idea. And if you're a band that has to play live, play loads and loads of gigs all the time if you can, if it's within your capability, because it's going to make you so much better, and rehearse a lot is that's my guide to being in a band.
That's pretty fair.
I feel like the only things I ever regret are the things I did when I was not being myself and trying to be someone else or something, and I can look back on that and be like, oh, God, that's cringe. Yeah. And, you know, the things that I look back and I'm like, oh, God, that's cringe. But I thought it was really cool at the time. It's a different type of cringe, which I'm really...
Is there a specific memory that you're like, oh, God?
No, but, you know, even lots just down things. To the songs that you've wrote, the lyrics that you wrote, the clothes that you wear, you know, if you thought it was good at the time, then that will be a nice memory. But if you were trying maybe to...
Trying to be something you're not is a very bad feeling when you look back at it, because it's not honest, isn't it? And people like you because of what you are.
Yeah, people see through that as well. People aren't dumb. If you're like trying to do... I see lots of bands like from the music that I get sent through the radio. You'll see a band that one year they were writing acoustic music, and then the next one they're writing synth music, and then the next one they're writing hip hop, and you can still see the same member change, and they're just trying to be famous.
Don't try and be famous.
If the music starts to become like secondary to anything else, then you've got a problem. As in, like, that's not good. But it's very easy in this industry for that to happen, I think.
I think music is almost a secondary byproduct to a lot of things when it comes to like media. Everybody wants to talk about pretty much everything except,
which I understand as well, like, because you want to know about the people making the music as well as about the music itself, which
It's just, yeah, it's context. But like, how do you get better as a musician and an artist when you're like out on tour? And
it's quite difficult, actually. I was thinking about that the other day.
Because if you're playing the same, if you're playing the same songs the time,
it can be really restrictive creatively. I think it's a muscle that needs to be worked sometimes, writing songs, and just trying to make something every day, from writing something down to recording something, can be really helpful in not letting that go, like, just that bit die off.
I think it's really hard as well to make music without... I often think to myself, like, why can't I write any songs? And I'll stop trying and I'll let kind of life play out, and then it'll be over too. So, you know, you can't write songs without, you know, if you're just constantly inside trying to write a song, you know, you have to go
and live,
go out and see your friends,
have something to sing about,
and go and see a film or read a book, or, you know, go for a walk or whatever. You have to do it. Songs need to have, you know, inspiration doesn't always just come from like learning your instrument better, even listening to other people's music. That doesn't always come from that.
Do you think you guys like will make a musical left turn, like as in like your second album was different than your first album? Does that mean your third album's going to be different than that, and then you're like going to switch off? Because like I don't know, it's in my mind frame at the minute because of the Arctic Monkeys new album which came out.
Yeah, I really like that album
on Friday, and it's so refreshing, and they've done a whole 180 from their last album.
Although, our first album and second album are different, they've gone for a completely... It's like that album is sonically like a period piece almost. Do you know what I mean?
Lyrically, it's kind of thematic and conceptual, isn't it?
I thought it was a concept album practically, when I listened to it.
What I thought was really interesting... I think it is. He's saying that he like built a world around it.
It's still so him, though, isn't
it?
Yeah,
no, like, totally. But that's why I think it works, is because they didn't stray too far from the path, because it was a natural progression, because I was watching something with him saying that it came from like he was watching a interview with Leonard Cohen, who started talking about his ideas of songwriting, and it was so different from what his ideas were already, and so it was like changing the pathways in his brain and then naturally letting this different kind of sound come out. And I thought that was really cool. Yeah. It wasn't like, you know what, I'm bored of doing this, I want to do this now. It's like he naturally let himself be inspired in a different way.
And that's when those kind of records will work, because they're quite challenging for the listener, aren't they? And if you can see it. Also, sonically, those progressions happened in terms of like when you listen to the last of the Shadow Puppets record, all the kind of the bass sounds and the guitar sounds and the organs and the vibraphones and all these things have started to permeate clearly what they're listening to. And then it takes another evolution onto the Arctic Monkeys record. I really like that.
They've hinted at that for a while, like even with Alex Turner's Submarine soundtrack in 2010 and The Last Shadow Puppets.
And AM as well.
Yeah, and AM. It's not that surprising that they've done this when you sort of like piece it all together.
Yeah, I didn't find it as shocking
as everybody said.
Yeah, but
I kind of feel like with all your records, you show so many sides to yourselves. It's not like a one size fits all. You're going to get a grungy album or a punky album, or like
you get a bit of everything.
You get a bit of everything on your records, which I quite like, because I've got a real short attention span for one type of music. So when I'm listening to an album and it switches up, that's why I quite like that.
I don't think we have thought about it that much in terms of what we're going to do with the third record yet.
Nah, I think you need to
finish doing this at all.
I want to make a concept album one day. I reckon it'd be so cool.
I definitely would like to try it one day.
But I think that's what
it's so
it's
hard
number
to
six
do
for them,
get, right?
It's number six for them.
This is their sixth album.
Sixth album.
We
yeah.
need to do more before we can get to that, I reckon, and get away with it.
Oh, your phone hasn't been charging.
It's on 9%. It's now on airplane mode. Hold on. For no one that knows. Oh wait, we already talked about my phone being charged.
Yeah, exactly. Video. That means I can't steal your data.
It's fine. I'm merely getting on the tube and going home.
That's okay.
And I've got no headphones.
Oh.
I don't have any apps.
Well, you're just going to have to sit and stare. You're going to have to... Do you know what? Here's your homework for the way home. Start a conversation with somebody in the London
Underground.
I'm not going to
do that. I'm not going to do that, because people
do
that.
We don't do that.
Exactly.
That's
so normal to you, not speaking to anybody on the tube. But like from when I moved here in 2012, I was like, hello there, how's it going? you look like my cousin Margaret.
Did you really?
I spoke to people on the tube.
Did she punch you in the face?
They looked at me like I was going
to
rob them.
That's so nice to do that.
I can't do it anymore. I've been completely...
You shouldn't. I don't advise it, but it's still a nice sentiment, isn't it?
Yeah. Like if somebody spoke to me... And it's also the same in pubs. In Ireland, I can
I like talking to strangers.
If I sit at the bar, it means I want to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, or I'm looking to get super weird.
I think that's a perfect place to leave it right now. Leave it at the bar. Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast. May the light of 100,000 moons shine down upon Wolf Alice, and thank you to Theo and Ellie for giving me up their time. If you see them at the bar, feel free to strike up a conversation with them. They absolutely love that. Also, do me a favour, please. Please subscribe to the Slacker Podcast, give it a little 5 stars if you liked it, and rate it, review it, and all the rest. Thank you very much, you gorgeous people, for listening. Phil Tigers. Slacker Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.